I have prepared a lot of transparencies, but because I don't know exactly in what you will be interested, but I don't expect to show all these transparencies to you. First thing I wanted to show is my other interest, because actually I am not working since a long time on this problem of the formation of stars in disk, and my other interest, in case we will discuss later during the month, are broad line region, the warm absorber, the iron K line, as I have already told. My writing is very bad, and it's why almost all my transparencies are made on the Macintosh. No, and a model for the UVX emission in AGN, which is different from the classical model of accretion, thin accretion disk. It's similar to the model proposed by Ries Fabian, which is a dense blob model, quasi-spherical, with a quasi-spherical accretion. And above all, I am developing, in fact, with Anne-Marie Dumont, who is the person who makes most of the work in this, transfer code for dense, thick, and irradiated media. And it was specially designed for irradiated disk or irradiated clouds. It's a full non-LTE computation with transfer in the line, which is different from the kind of photoionization code used, for instance, called, for instance, Cloudy. Of course, there is a computation of ionization at thermal equilibrium. For the moment, we have 10 elements, all ionic species, and about 5 levels per species. So if somebody is interested by using eventually this code, now it begins to work.
When you say irradiated, it means there is no internal energy source?
No internal energy source. That we can put an internal energy source by hand, if you want. It's what we can do. So, about the problem of star formation. Sorry for the transfer. Star formation and evolution in accretion disk. The first thing I will do is to explain the motivation of the work, which comes from the evidence of enriched gas and outflow in the central parsec of high redshift QSO. Second, I will explain what are accretion disks around massive black hole and stars in this accretion disk. In a very simple model that we have developed with Jean-Paul Zahn, and finally the implication for quasar and also for a possible enrichment of galaxies and intergalactic medium. And this is the work made essentially in two papers, one Colin Huré, which is published last year, and Colin Zahn, which is in press presently. Yes, thank you very much. So, I don't know if it is necessary here. I have some for people who are not used to this kind of thing, but I think that everyone here is used to that. To this number, I wanted only to point a number, the characteristic number, for instance, the rate of accretion of an 10 to the 8 solar mass per year, if it has an Eddington factor, of, if you want a ratio to the critical mass, to the critical accretion rate of the order of unity, which is of the order of 1 solar mass per year, because I will come back to this later, and also so the growing time of a black hole, which has been amply discussed last week, which is of the order of 10 to the 8 years, this factor here is again the m dot over m dot critical. And in quasar in AGN, this factor is of the order of, say, 0.1 up to unity for high luminosity quasar. So, the the evidence for enrichment inside the central parsec of quasar comes from two things. First, what we call the broad emission lines. The broad emission lines, which are well known since 30 years, give us some indication on the abundance, and it has recently been shown that in high-Z quasar there is an anomaly of abundance of this ratio, nitrogen over carbon, which is of the order of 5. It's missing, and probably means that the abundance, the heavy element abundance, is of the order of 5 solar, the abundance, 5 times the solar abundance. This comes from papers by Hamann and Ferland, who have also developed a model on which I will talk later to explain this overabundance in the broad emission line. And I must say that I have read in detail their paper. I think that really this overabundance is present because it's based, of course, on models, on photoionization model, but the evidence is there. The ratio of the nitrogen 5 line over the carbon 4 line is really increasing with the redshift, and probably this is... at least with a factor 2, it's true. If I have taken this, if I have saying all this, is because from the broad absorption line later we will not have so much certainty. But here it is sure. There is also yes. Oh, sorry.
Is it for both nebulae and radioactive quasars?
I think it is essentially for radio quiet quasar. I don't know if it is a mixed sample that they have used. It's for the most brilliant quasar that this has been this kind of study has been done, because you need also to have weak lines to be sure that you are using the good photoionization model. So I would suspect that it's for radio quiet quasar, but I'm not sure that the sample does not include also radio loud. We have claimed a very long time ago, Netzer et al. And myself et al., that iron is overabundant in local AGN. So since the issue is not fixed for the moment, I will not base many things on that, but I think that at least the abundance is solar, but this is not this is normal since these AGN are local.
So that zero is a solar,
really
not solar.
Oh, zero, it's a solar, sorry. It's because I am not used to the Macintosh here, and I have so here also this sign.
The issues of Macintosh is in general.
Yes, okay, you can say that. So, from the variability, so this is the abundance. Now, from variability and time lag, and in particular the monitoring which have been made, but this is for local AGN, there seem to be a relation between the size of the broad emission line region and the luminosity here expressed in 10 to 46 hertz per second. And this relation is the following: the size seems to scale with the square root of the luminosity, and is of the order of a parsec for this luminosity. Just a remark now, which is important, is that if we assume that the broad line, the velocity which is seen in the broad line, that is to say the thickness, the width of the broad line, which correspond to a few 10 to 3 kilometers per second, is due to a kind of Keplerian or virial velocity, it means that the radius of the broad emission line is of the order of 10 to 4 gravitational radius. And when you put this with this, you get this expression, which gives you the bolometric to Eddington luminosity of the order of 0.1, as I have already said. But this is important to remember that the radius of the broad line is of the order of 10,000 gravitational radius, and this means that for a quasar, for an AGN with a black hole of the order of 10 to the 8 solar mass, it's of the order of a tenth, say, of a parsec.
That's square root of f. R going like square root of
R going
from observation.
Yes, there is a correlation. I have not taken the correlation is very very good, but it spans perhaps now 2 orders of magnitude, perhaps 3 orders of magnitude in luminosity. Greg, you agree with me with that?
From what I've seen, it's a summary.
Is there any understanding why it should have this correlation?
So I will propose an yes.
So your proposition here is there is no strong dependence of the broad line widths.
Oh yes, it's
on
true.
Luminosity.
It's true. We have made perhaps 20 years ago also a study of that, the width of the broad line from a bad sample, and there does not seem a big correlation. The width of the broad line spans a factor 3 for a luminosity which spans a factor 10 to the 5. So.
I remember Monique Jolie.
Yes, it's this work we have done. Yes,
right.
we have done it together. So now the broad absorption line. What are the broad absorption lines? Here is a very old spectrum of a quasar. You see here broad emission line and broad absorption troughs, as they are called, which is something which is very difficult to translate in French, and we translate that by puits. Auge, that is for pigs. You see here that these lines are very broad, and compared to broad emission line, they are at least as broad, and they are always on the blue side of the line, so it means that it's matter which is outflowing from the object. And here, it's a recent spectrum I have taken by Aman with the Keck, which show you the very, very good kind of spectrum which are obtained now, with a lot of absorption line, narrow absorption line identified, and also broad absorption line. Here, this big cross, and the emission line corresponding here, for instance, it's the Lyman alpha nitrogen 5 line, which is here. And okay, so what we can get from this broad absorption line, we have heard last week from Norm Murray, I think. I don't see. Okay, so you interrupt me if I am saying something wrong. That it is present in 10% of quasars, and the idea is that it is present in all quasars, but with a coverage factor of the order of 0.1. And if I have understood the discussion now, the idea is in fact that the coverage factor is larger because we don't see a lot of what we call ball quasars, which are reddened and absorbed. So probably this is of the order of 0.5. Now, The second result concerning this BAL is that they are overabundant, but there is a big discussion. I have understood that also recently, and thanks to Greg, I have understood why the overabundance are now controversial, and perhaps it's only solar abundance and not overabundance, this being due to the confusion, to the fact that with a bad spectrum, it has not been discovered until recently that these lines were not going up to the zero level, but there was a scattering continuum which was not taken into account. Also, there was possible anomalies. For instance, this, it has been claimed that in one object there is a big anomaly of phosphorus, but the same comment as previously holds, so probably it's an artifact due to this problem of coverage effect. But I insist on the fact that at least this abundance are solar. Also, it has been claimed during 20 years that they were highly over-solar. The medium is outflowing, as I have already shown to you, because of this, this line are on the blue side of the emission line, and the velocity of the flows is of the order of 10 to the 4, up to 3 to the 4 kilometers per second. The distance at which these lines are formed is unknown, because all what we can deduce from the models is the column density. So the distance perhaps is large, but it's at least of the order of the of the radius of the BLR, and perhaps it is larger. But I don't think that it is much, much larger. In any case, it has not a big importance in the following. BLR, broad line region, is a BL, yes. Sorry, emission line. Emission line. It is called the BLR, broad line region. Now, from the photoionized model, the column density of this metals are deduced, BAL region are deduced. They are of the order of 10 to the 22 per square centimeter, but also Norm Murray has explained to us last week that it can be larger, and in particular it is linked, it has been discovered already 3 years ago, that this BAL quasar are always linked with a very strong X-ray absorption. I will come back to this in a minute. So something that I want to also stress is that these broad absorption lines are present in about 50% of the local AGN, because which show only but with velocity which are smaller, only a few. Say 1,000 kilometers per second to a few 1,000 kilometers per second, as it has been shown on HST spectra recently. So I don't know if I will insist on this problem or come immediately to the. I will try to show that the deduced outflowing mass is large and is of the order of even larger than the accretion rate, but this is a long discussion which I don't know if I will give here, because it's a discussion concerning the way this column density is obtained. So this is a very empirical way of obtaining the mass outflow directly only from the coverage factor, from the velocity, here it's the abundance of the element, assuming a given column density and a given radius. And you see that it's of the order of 10 minus 1 mass, solar mass per year.
Is yes. That column density for the heavy element that's observed, or
That's the problem. That's the problem. This column density is deduced. It's deduced from photoionization model. It's deduced from the curve of growth of the lines. So there are many problems in that. I can explain to you. I have made a little. For instance, these two possibilities. I think Norm Murray is better than me to explain what he's suggesting, that there is an absorption, a very large absorption inside the broad absorption line, and in this case, this column density is not well deduced, and it can be, let's say, perhaps 100. So it means that in this case, the mass outflow is much larger than the, is of the order of even larger than the mass, the accretion rate. Do you want to have that, this explanation?
Well, I was going to say that the mass loss rate is simply about a tenth actually the mass outflow for a big quasar.
Yes.
But yeah, there is a question about exactly what the column is because the previous determinations were based on photoionization codes and assuming the lines are not optically thick. And there's good evidence now that the lines are optically thick. So
yes.
Those inferences are quite wrong. On the other hand, the X-ray data, the two systems that have actually been detected as opposed to just up the limit, find its columns of about 2 or 3 times 10 to the 23. So they do seem to have big columns. Now, it's not certain that the X-ray absorption is associated absorption, but
I'd say it's a pretty good bet. So I have a problem, I must say, which I would like to discuss with you, which is a problem of the re-emission due to this large column density, absorbing column density.
Yes.
Because I think that it has not been considered in the past, and I don't see where the emission is coming. It should come actually not only in the lines because it's not sufficient, but also in the UV. And I am not sure that in the models this has been taken into account.
Yeah, well, you're saying it might have to do with big blue bump.
Big blue bump, perhaps. Okay.
So, no, I think I'm going to talk about it. First, I've got to go ahead and
so I will not insist on that, and let me accept this idea that the outflow is of the order of the accretion rate.
This formula happens to be scientific. It's a
sorry.
The m dot out, the first formula.
Oh, it's. It's purely you get it immediately if you the classical V multiplied by the column density multiplied by the.
Okay.
It's directly from the observation if you admit that this is the order of magnitude of the column density. It's 4 pi r square v, simply that.
Right, what is that?
What?
What is that doing there? V.
Oh, it is coming because this column density is linked with the abundance.
Well, the question is right.
Yes. So, if we assume that this is indeed the mass, the outflow, during the whole AGN lifetime, which is of the order of 10 to the 8 years, as I have said before, we get an abundance of mass outflow, there is a point here, of metal, which is of the order of, say, even larger, 10 to the 7 solar mass for a black hole of the order of 10 to the 8 solar mass. And so it's the number that I will take into account in the following. So we have to realize that this gas escapes from the nucleus and from the protogalaxy or from the galaxy if the quasar is surrounded by a host galaxy which is already formed because it has a velocity which is larger than the escape velocity at a few parsecs. So it reaches 1 megaparsec, say for instance, during the lifetime of the quasar, before it is braked by the snowplow effect. And I think that this explains why the narrow absorption line, and it's evident, with an absorption redshift of the order of the emission redshift, have large abundance as it has been shown recently. This abundance, in particular in oxygen, is I would say about 3 times solar in a few quasars where this kind of absorption system has been observed.
And that is larger than other
Yes.
random absorption.
Yes, that is larger than the abundance on the on other the absorption system, which is small. In fact, 10 minus 2, 10 minus 1. I will come back also to this. Yes.
Z over Z sun.
Yes.
It's interesting, which is the reciprocal of what you had for the.
You are talking about the mass in metals here.
In metals, yes. Because, yes.
Could there really be
maybe there's no feedback?
Yeah, right. Because the metal column density is the directly observed thing.
No, because this is not. Okay. So it's a. Okay. You can put it in a normal mass and then change that to two orders of magnitude smaller, if you prefer. It's true. I agree, Greg. So it's m out, which is of the order of 10^7 to 10^9 solar mass.
All right. This okay? is the actual mass of heavy elements contained in the wind.
Yes, 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 yes.
We'll talk about
okay. Okay. So, two processes have been proposed to explain the overabundance. As I have said already last week, and first it is...
Solar abundance
in high Z quasar, if you want. Enrichment by a starburst in the center of the galaxy hosting the quasar. So, of course, this is at a kiloparsec scale at least. This is the mechanism proposed by Hamann and Fairland. And second, stars from the core of giant galaxies are captured by the accretion disk close to the black hole. They accrete and they lead to supernova explosion as it was proposed by Artimovitz, Lin and Wampler. But both these processes require that star formation has begun much before the active phase of the quasar, say typically a billion years before. It's why, and second, it corresponds, this process at least, not this one, but this process corresponds to a larger scale that was what is observed. It is not, I don't say that this process is incompatible with the observation, but at least we have to explain a very big enrichment in the very center of quasar. So, what we propose is that stars are formed inside the disk at a radius which is small during both the growing and the active phase. And now I will try to develop this idea in the following years.
It also means a great efficiency of processing gas, isn't it? Because it means there is no primordial gas left. All of it is from the second generation stars
yes.
and whatever.
Yes, yes.
Your model is sort of a combination of the two.
Exactly a combination of the two, yes. I had no new idea.
The new idea is happening right in the disk.
No. The new idea is it's happening in the disk, and it's happening, it can happen with a disk which is not enriched, which is made of primordial matter, and it will, as you see, it will not change, it will evolve very rapidly to enriched disk. So, now consideration about accretion disk around massive black hole. We know that at small air reduce, and by small reduce I mean reduce of the order of say smaller than thousand gravitational reduce, we have alpha disk or we have ADAF with turbulent velocity. So generally there is no problem about that. But there is a radius which I called RT, which is in memory of because it's the Tumre which has discovered this mechanism, at about 10 to the 3 gravitational radius, which means 10 to minus 2 parsec in for a black hole of the order of 10 to the 8 solar mass, this parameter, which is called Q, becomes smaller than unity, and it has been shown in this case by Tumri, Balgoldrush, and Lindenbell that the disk becomes gravitationally unstable. But I insist on the fact that it becomes locally gravitationally unstable because its mass is much smaller than the mass of the black hole at this radius, at least if you assume an alpha disk. So it is not globally self-gravitating. And this is a note I make, which is the fact that notice that it is of the order of the broad emission line region, which means that something is happening at this radius. And the something which is happening is that apparently there is the disk is changing. Because we don't see broad line region, except of course the iron fluorescence line, but which are of a very different kind, which are not similar to the broad line region and are emitted by reflection.
Okay.
Yes.
The mass accretion rate is in that factor Fe. There's no m dot in this formula.
It's m dot, the small m dot that people use, but small m dot assuming an accretion rate, assuming an efficiency of 0.1.
Goes to the positive power of m dot. That means at low m dot, the Tumre radius is even smaller.
I will show you.
Okay.
I will show you the detailed computation made by Jean-Marc Huré and myself last year, which takes into account real opacity which show you the radius in term of gravitational radius, so you see here 10 to the 4 gravitational radius, as a function of the mass expressed in solar mass, but for a critical accretion rate. And what you see here is that grossly speaking, for alpha equal 0.1, you see it is decreasing as the mass to the power, I don't remember, to the power 2, something like this. So the formula is in our paper. And here, you see that there is no difference between primordial gas and solar metallicity gas. Only in this region, this is due to the fact that the temperature in this region is larger than 3,000 degrees, and the gas is not molecular, it's atomic, and in this case, the main efficiency of the cooling comes from the hydrogen line and hydrogen ionization. So this is the way it varies with the mass. So you see that typically it's 10 to the 4 for the class, for the mass of a black hole. Okay, so when So for radius larger than this radius, Thumri radius, the alpha viscosity is not a viable mechanism because, for two reasons. First, because if you assume that it's always alpha viscosity, the disk will become strongly gravitationally unstable very, very quickly, because this comes from the fact that the scale height of the disk is decreasing as the self-gravity increases, and therefore the self-gravity increases because of this decrease of scale height. I will show you the equation in a moment. Second, the disk cannot sustain the required accretion rate because the mass transfer becomes too slow, the typical viscous time being of the order of 10 to the 9 year for this parameter. And this is much too long because the lifetime of the AGN is of the order of 10 to the 8 years, so we have to transfer mass in a much smaller time. So, the question... Yes?
You might naively say, well, if that's the lifetime, the viscous transport time, and you need a certain accretion rate, why you simply have to have a high surface density. And is that where the gravitational instability comes in, that you are limiting your mass of the outer disk to be not more than the marginally unstable amount? Then you apply this viscous time.
No. This is very, very simple. Again, it's only the typical viscous time coming from the alpha viscosity. But of course, it is scaled with a temperature which we don't know. This is assuming nothing. Forgetting yes, you are right. It's for a non-self-gravitating disk. Assuming that it is non-self, so limiting the self-gravity to be of the order of the central gravity. Yes, sorry, I agree. It's not for a self-gravitating disk.
It's a normal alpha
disk. Yes. So what happens between, say, 0.1 and 100 parsec, how is the angular momentum and the mass transport? Do stars form in the disk due to the gravitational instability? What is the structure of the disk? And I mentioned that the solution which is generally admitted is what we call the molecular torus, which is made of randomly moving clouds, but the viscosity of this torus is not well identified because it is assumed that it's cloud-cloud collisions. I have not seen, but perhaps I am not right, any computation of viscosity in this kind of, for instance, of the real efficiency of cloud-cloud collision to give viscosity. And moreover, the velocity of the cloud which is needed for that, for the mechanism to be efficient is large. The disk is thick, and we don't know exactly from where comes this velocity of the cloud. I have made a very, very bad. I have forgot my transparency about that. So I have made a very, very bad scheme of an accretion disk. So here you see the region which is located in the first 1,000 gravitational radius, and which is, say, the standard accretion disk. Note that it is supported by radiation pressure and not by gas pressure, so it is unstable, as we have already said last week. Here, we are going at this radius, we are going into the beginning of the galaxy, and global instability can begin to work. And here, it is generally assumed that there are bar instability, which gives the angular momentum, which allows the matter to flow to the center. But in between, there is a range of 10 to 3 in radius, where we don't know exactly what happens, and this is where the disk is locally unstable, and it is either made of high velocity interacting clouds or It can be a gas disk with star, as I will show in the following. And here I have plotted also the corresponding radius in parsec for a 10 to 8 solar mass black hole. Is it okay? Okay. So I don't, it's not my problem, it's yours. Oh, it's why. So, now.
Question.
Yes.
Why, what special is this scenario? Why, for example, you are not formation of clouds early at latitude, for example, 10 parsecs?
At?
10
parsecs. Oh,
why,
you can.
What is parameter which decides so, that Paris down to three Gershnerady, not to larger distance or not to lower distance?
Sorry, Marek.
What is parameter
here,
which decides so, that bar is still
in? Oh, bar is finished. Oh, it's only because the mass here of the disk is small. It's no more. It's not globally unstable. It's only vertically unstable. Okay.
But I thought he was always also asking why can't stars form in the bar region?
They can. Here, you mean?
Out in the bar region.
Oh, they can form. Again, I would say it's not my problem, and maybe the bar is made of stars. It can be made of stars. I think it works also well. No. They can, of course. And if you mean by that you can have also formation of star and evolution of star in the bar, of course. It's
the thing is that the bar instability already promotes mass accretion.
Yes. It's only that. I wonder what happens between this and this, because for the moment we don't know. We have process to transfer mass in the galaxy itself, here also, but not really in between. Okay? But of course it can work also in the bar. So, I recall that in a gravitationally unstable disk, the size of the most unstable perturbation is simply the size of the scale height of the disk, and the growth time is, it was already, I think, in the work of Tumri and Lyndon Bell, but it has been again computed by Wang and Silk, and the time of growth is the orbital time multiplied by this parameter, where you remember that this Q is a Tumri parameter, which is of the order of unity or smaller when we are in the gravitationally unstable region. And so this parameter, the orbital time, you see it's quite small. It's of the order of 10 to the 4 year. So it means that unless this is is quite small, you will get a growth of the unstable fragment very, very rapidly, and to limit, and all the gas will be rapidly transformed into star. It's why we will need a Q of the order of unity, unless it will be transformed into star very rapidly. So it is possible. The problem is that if it happens, it means that the disk will not be again, will not be there. There will be a disk of star, which has been studied indeed in the 90s by, for instance, Beagleman. And they had shown that in this case, the disk cannot transfer the mass because it's made simply of star. There is no more gas. So we would like that the disk stay marginally unstable, that is to say Q of the order of unity, or it will be destroyed. And what I will show is that it can stay of the order marginally unstable. I don't know if I all the work now is made in the framework of vertically averaged stationary disk. And I recall perhaps here, it's very simple, it's only algebraic equation, yes.
There's a big leap there in going from the statement that it's marginally or is unstable and the growth time is short,
yes,
to the conclusion that the result of all that is to turn all the gas into stars. I mean, are there no other possibilities like just the establishment of density waves?
Of course, there are other possibilities, and one of the possibilities which has been envisioned is the possibility that the gas, this cloud, this torus made of cloud, that the gas does not collapse to stars, but stay in marginally unstable, just marginally unstable clouds, which interact together and gives, as I have said already, the viscosity. My statement will be that on the that it is not what happens, and that the gas collapses until it becomes star. It's really only and that's I would say a statement that we make in this study because we have no proof of that, but we are. Basing this fact on simply on the fact that stars are forming in the galaxy everywhere, and we don't know exactly why. So we have assumed that part, not all, a fraction of the gas, which happens to be of the order of 1,000th of the mass of the gas, will transform into stars. It's all. And this is this is actually what happens in the galaxy, in the molecular clouds. Okay? So, here, it's only to recall you, so this is a system of very of algebraic equation, but only I wanted to insist on three facts actually. This is an alpha disk which is represented here, and here it's a marginally unstable disk, simply this prescription and the other prescription here are replaced simply by the prescription that Q is of the order of unity. We will see later that it is not sufficient because we have also to have a prescription for the transfer of angular momentum.
I'm sure everyone understands this is a different Q.
No, this is the Tumri Q. Where? So Q plus
heating rate.
Yeah, heating rate.
It's not a positive and negative Tumri.
Yes. No, sorry. Sorry. Here, it's what happens if the disk is not irradiated. If the disk is irradiated, it's more complicated, and perhaps I will come back, I don't know, on this fact, on this later, because actually we will have to take into account the irradiation which comes from the central source, from the stars themselves which forms in the disk, and this is a complicated way because actually the kind of gray, I call this gray computation, that means we use either Planck or Rossland mean for the opacity, cannot hold, in particular in the case of primordial disk. But I will probably not have time to discuss that. So I want to insist also on this this equation, which is the equation, the hydrostatic equilibrium equation, taking into account the self-gravity, and this is very often not taken into account, even in the region of the disk where it is important. This equation, actually, if you put here this term of self-gravity, it changes completely the whole algebraic system, because here you get in particular the density inside, and you see this effect of the density increasing. The scale height actually is proportional to this term, the square of the scale height. height. So you squeeze the scale height, and at the same time you increase the density.
When you replace that whole block of equations with the tomb rate criterion.
Yes.
How do you calculate the temperature of the gas?
Exactly the same way, that is to say, either using this equation where we put the viscose, that is the problem. In the first paper with Ure, we have put only this viscose term, which assumes that that all the gravitational release, whatever is the cause of the transfer of mass, is given is giving heat. In the second paper with Jean-Paul, we have not assumed that because we have assumed that the gravitational the viscosity heating was also, as I have said, was complemented by other kind of heating.
Okay, so it's just equations 3 and 9.
Yes.
So it's two equations. Yes.
Not
the whole set of equations.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
Now, you are assuming m dot is constant as a function of radius.
That is absolutely.
Whereas
absolutely.
In the picture, the gas comes and it keeps making stars. So you might expect m dot to change.
Except that you will see that the mass of the gas is larger than the mass of the star in the model.
Very good.
So you say that in the second paper there's a additional source of heat.
Yes, yes. Of angular momentum. We in the second paper we specify the angular the way to transfer the angular momentum. So I see that I am going much too slowly. So perhaps I.
Because they have such a big pile of transparency.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
No, but I.
Yes,
but I don't want to do the same thing. So, what is important in the marginally unstable gaseous disk is that the density is given with respect to this parameter, which is of the order of unity by definition for the marginally unstable gaseous disk. Actually, it is exactly equal to 4.8, and you see that the density, it's only to give you insight into this kind of disk, the density is only depending on the mass and the position and doesn't depend on the mass rate, on the accretion rate. But of course, it's very artificial, I agree. We have to find the mechanism to maintain the disk in this state. So we have made the computation of this marginally unstable disk, and we have shown that they had some properties, and the one very important property is that they are molecular, completely molecular, in the region where they are tumory unstable. So it's why we will. This is the important thing because it will be important for the rest of the talk to know that we are in a region where the disk is molecular. So all this is not very important. Yes.
What is Planck temperature?
So if you want, I can show you. It's of the order of 100 to 1,000 degrees.
So don't you care about dust?
Of course, we take into account dust. That is a big difference between this disk and this disk, because this disk has dust, and actually the opacity between 1,000 and 100 degrees is of the order of 1 per gram. So it's very easy when they are with normal abundance, because you assume that there is dust and the opacity is very simple. In this kind of disk, we have assumed that the opacity is given only by hydrogen, by molecular hydrogen, and of course there are other elements, and we have to take that into account. Okay, I don't show you the result. No. Because I want to show you more interesting things. This is only a very academic case, I would say. Yes, of course. If you remark, for you, Ramesh, I think that stationarity is not very important because it's a local treatment. So except for the fact that we have to take into account the illumination by the central source, for which we have assumed that the mass, the accretion rate was the same as at large distance, it is not important. And in particular, since the illumination is not very important in this region of the disk, unless the disk is warped, we have not to take that into account. So the results are valid not only for the critical case, but also in a range of values, say of the order of 1 to 10. The assumption of homogeneity is very important because we assume that the disk is made of an homogeneous gas, and we have to check that it is possible. And of course, magnetic field is neglected. So now there are two problems. As I said, this case, the marginally unstable disk, was an academic case because now we have to identify the mass transport mechanism and also to show that the gaseous disk can stay homogeneous even in star forms in this disk. So it's what we have done. And a very rapid sketch of the paper is here. There are three phases. First, the formation phase, which, as I said before, is a very, very artificial, I would say. We assume that there are some fragments which collapse to star in a time scale of the order of the free fall time scale, which is much smaller than the transport, than the time for transporting the matter to the black hole. Of course, we have to verify, I will show you in more detail, that the angular momentum can be removed in order that the collapse stay quasi-spherical and takes place with the time of the order of the free fall time. And for that we have only very very rough recipes, and we have not computed indeed completely the how the angular momentum can be removed. The second phase, so I will come immediately to this phase. I don't know if I have time to go through that. No, I don't think so. I prefer, if you want, after to discuss that. The second phase is an accretion phase, which is the fact, I was saying that before, for the black hole it's the same. You have a star, or say a protostar, which is in the disk, and what will happen is that it will accrete unless there is a gap opened in part due to density wave, induced density wave, and also if the hole, the difference between a gap and a hole, opened by the star itself is replenished quickly. And what we have assumed is that it is replenished at with an accretion rate which is of the order of the accretion rate in the disk multiplied by h over r onto the star. There are intuitive argument for that only because the shear gives okay, you agree with that. So if we
if you could explain the physics for that.
Okay, I will.
This is the total accretion rate onto the supermassive black hole, right?
Yes. This is the total accretion rate, and this is
h over r falls just from the star.
Yes. 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 Okay.
Fairly large rate.
It's a fairly, actually it was what was assumed in the paper of Artimovitz also, okay, it comes from, it's a cross section, yes.
No, I understand that. Right. So what you have is one star going round, everything that crosses just
yes.
From the star, because it's going very quickly.
So I can show you more. So it's simply that. You see, this is the differential velocity between the two, between H and H, R and R plus H, and the this gives you an accretion rate. Sorry, and it gives an accretion rate which is actually lower than the real accretion rate, because the star can accrete from its Roche lobe, which is larger than this H. So this is an underestimation of the accretion rate. So it gives a time for accretion which is until the star has reached a mass of, say, 10 solar mass, which is given by that, and I will show you the result after for this value. So now there is also the problem of we have to verify that there is no gap opened and where? So, oh, the gap is open
in the disk.
In the disk, yes. Because if there is a gap, of course, the star will not accrete. So we have used the computation made by many people, by Papaloiseau and Pringle, Ward, and it shows that the gap is opened only for mass of the star, which is quite big. And I will show you later the result. And also, this induced wave have another effect, which is to make the star migrate towards the black hole. And again, we have computed the migration time, which is not very well known, but we find that the migration time is larger than the time for evolution of a star until the state of a supernova. So finally, the star grows and grows quite quickly and reaches the main sequence in about the same time as shown by this computation, and then begins the main sequence evolution during which the star develops winds, H2 region, and accretion is stopped because of this winds and H2 region. Actually, the problem of the wind is more complicated for us because for primordial gas, we have no big winds, large winds, but the H2 region, which opens also a hole around the star, is sufficient to stop the accretion. And before they migrate to the black hole, they will evolve to supernovae. And this is a problem that remains to be treated. What happens to the neutron star? They migrate slowly also towards the black hole, and in about 10 to the 8 years they will reach the black hole. But what happens between, and also the black hole, the small black holes form, yes?
What about the supernova kick velocity, which we think is large?
Yes, so so you think it can eject a supernova outside of the disk? Okay, it's what you mean?
Yes, ejecting the neutron stars from the disk.
So, it is possible, right. Yes.
But it's simply bound to the center of black hole.
Depends how far out this occurs. You're getting 1,000 kilometers a second.
1,000 kilometers per second.
And I forget how far out you are here, but anyway.
10 to the 4th gravitational
radius. 10 to the 4, right?
So that's 3,000 kilometers per second.
So it is. So it is. If it is 3,000 kilometers per second, it will be ejected because the Keplerian velocity is smaller in this part of the disk. So, but
black hole will stay.
Black hole with. Stay in the disk. So what happens to the black hole, the formed black hole? It's a problem we have. I don't know. So, okay. So, I now come to the problem. Ah, you have seen that there was just mentioned that supernovae transport angular momentum, induce transfer of angular momentum in the disk. And that is a big recipe we have found to get rid of the angular momentum. And that was the formation of these supernovae. So this has been done by, by computation, by simulation, by Rosiska, Bodenheimer, and Lin, but showing how the angular momentum is transported in the when a supernova explodes in the disk. You see here the density contour of a supernova remnant exploding after explosion in the disk, and you see this is after one orbital time, and the supernova remnant disappear after about one orbital time because it is squeezed. And also I will show you in a moment, because it's the maximum velocity of the supernova remnant in the plane of the disk is the shear, is equal to the shear of the Keplerian velocity. So here they have computed angular momentum transport. So this is a iso-angular momentum given by the explosion of the supernova. But in any case, it's a very intuitive result that we can also get simply from very simple computation. We have used their prescription, what they found for the transfer of angular momentum in their simulation, but we have modified this to take into account that it was a 2D computation, and actually the supernova is exploding in a 3D medium, and you have to take into account this factor, which is h over the maximum radius of the supernova remnant, which they have not taken into account because in their model, at least, the height of the disk was of the order of this radius, which is not the case for us. This is much smaller than unity for us. So what is written here is simply the fact that the total momentum of the supernova is given to the disk, the proportion of the total momentum, the h over r, fraction of the total angle, total momentum is given to the disk, and what we have to take into account is also something which is intuitive, is that the expansion stops when the velocity of the remnant equals the Keplerian shear. They have used this prescription. They have verified by their simulation that it's okay. So we have used this and this gives the size, the maximum size of the supernova, if we accept the idea that this terminal velocity is equal to the velocity of the supernova remnant, which is given by the momentum divided by the moment by the mass transported. The mass swept by the supernova. So this gives us a radius which you see is small compared to the radius of the disk, but nevertheless larger than the thickness of the disk, much larger. And we can compute the angular momentum given by one supernova, and our, I would say, main assumption is that all the angular momentum transport is supplied by the supernova, and in this case we can get the number of supernova per unit time, which is simply the the mass transported in the disk, the angular momentum of this mass divided by the angular momentum given by one supernova, and we find this number, which is of the order of one supernova per year, per decade of radius, multiplied by this number. So we have to determine the scale height of the disk, and this depends crucially, of course, on the temperature of the disk itself. So what we make now is a model in which we assume a given accretion rate, so that is also an important assumption we make in this computation, is that the accretion rate is constant, the stationary accretion rate and stationary spatially also, and then we assume marginal instability of the gas, but we check that a posteriori that it is the solution we find. The heating of the disk, we modify, I don't show the equation, we modify the heating of the disk to take into account the stars. We assume that the formation of the star is regulated by the condition that, and this is the, also the prescription that we have taken from Wang and Silk, is given by the gas, the mass of the star multiplied by a certain accretion, efficiency of star formation, that, which we find of the order of 10^-3, divided by the time of growth of this star. And just there was a difference, we have discussed a lot about this this case. What we should take into account here is only the Q, the Thumri parameter of the gas, and not the Thumri parameter for the whole gas and star. Also, it is not very different because the whole opened around the star by the H2 region makes it no formation of star possible near around a star itself. It's only in the gas without stars that we can have this formation of star. So we buy we build Actually, we would like to form binary star because it's a very important way to remove the angular momentum. I have not shown the, this part of the work. We have to remove the angular momentum by a factor 10^3. That is to say, the angular momentum of the fragment at the beginning should be about 1,000 larger than the maximum angular momentum of a star. So we have to remove this, and we assume that it is removed either by a planetary system which is formed around the star or by binary star, and also by a tidal effect which between the black hole and the star, which synchronize the fragment in a time scale of the order of the dynamical time scale. And all this can be of the order of this factor 10^3, but it's only coin d'une enveloppe, it's very rough estimation. So what we have studied in detail, because we wanted to see if the stars would not destroy the disk. So we have to study the effect of the H2 region, the wind, and the supernovae. And we have studied that with a very simple prescription and found that, for instance, taking the H2 region, the H2 region has expanded very rapidly at the beginning of the burning of the star on the main sequence. And therefore, the H2 region can break out of the disk. But immediately, when it has broken out of the disk, the expansion stops because it is depressurized. So the way it is expanding, which is due to internal pressure of the ionized gas, doesn't exist. And the H2 region stops at this radius and does not extend more than the scale height of the disk. Sorry?
Two scale height,
yes. Okay, we are not in this kind of precision. So, a hole of dimension scale height is open around the star with a density which is much, much smaller than the density in the disk itself. The winds, we have also studied these winds, they are very efficient, they would be very efficient in a gas formed by with a normal metal abundance, and probably they will stop, destroy the disk more rapidly than, for instance, the H2 region and the supernovae, but we have assumed that it is not so efficient in primordial gas. And finally, supernovae, and I have explained that the supernovae are not very important to, they do not destroy the disk. There can be many supernovae at the same time because very rapidly the shell of the supernovae disappears after one orbital time. So now, what I show you is simply the result of this computation, and I show one computation, which is actually very simple because it's only algebraic equation, as I have said, to solve. And it's very complicated diagram. I have time to explain this, and it's almost finished after. No, 10 minutes again to show the implication after. So, this is a case where we have primeval abundance, black hole mass of the order of 10 to the 6 solar mass, and accretion rate of 0.1, the critical accretion rate, and we assume that the angular momentum given by the supernova is 10 to 43 ergs per... I don't remember the dimension of an angular... not angular momentum, sorry, linear momentum. But it's the normal momentum given by a supernova. So here, for instance, you see in expressed in year different time, and what you can see is that the transport time of the matter is larger than the freefall time. Actually, the collapse time for the star is one order of magnitude even that than this time. The cooling time is very small. The migration time is larger than the transport time, but it is of the order of the accretion time for this value. So perhaps all this is not very, very relevant because the star have not time to accrete. Actually, this migration time is very badly known, apparently. So, and even people think that it should not migrate towards the black hole, but in the other direction. So. Probably we have not to worry too much about that. So, there are several conditions which should be fulfilled, and we have verified that these conditions are fulfilled. And one of these conditions, for instance, is that the number of stars relative to the maximum number is much smaller than the maximum number allowed by the H2 region. And you see it's of the order of 10 minus 3. Another very important thing is that the number of stars should be smaller than the maximum number of stars given by tidal effect. That is to say that when the number of stars is larger than this value, the tidal effect due to the stars themselves in the disk preclude the formation of other stars. So here it becomes of the order of unity. The number of supernova with respect to the total number corresponding to the fact that the disk is completely paved by supernova remnant is also of the order of 10 minus 1. And finally, the parameter, if you are interested by the parameter corresponding to this computation, for instance, the temperature, you did ask for the temperature before, is of the order of 10 to 3 to 1200 degrees. The number of stars is of the order of 10 to... It's integrated from the outer edge to the inner edge. The number of stars is of the order of, say, 10 to the 3 at this radius, which is of the order of 0.3 parsec. The mass of the gas is here. It's of the order of the mass of the star. We have assumed that the mass of the star is the mean, the average mass is 30 solar mass. And what else? Oh, this is very important. Of course, this is most important. This is the number of supernovae per year, which is of the order of 10 minus few 10 minus 3 per year for this model.
I have a question about the number of stars.
Yes.
Thousand.
Yes.
Some of those stars are not accreting because they have wind and H2.
Yes.
Is that right? And
yes.
Some of them are accreting.
Yes. It's only in a very.
How many are actually accreting?
I would say less than 100, because the time for accretion phase of the star is 10 to 4 years. It's why. Of course, there is an assumption underlying all this computation. It's that the star, the supernovae, have time to form, and the disk, the mass, the accretion rate of the disk, stay almost constant during a period of time which is much larger than the evolution time of the star, which is of the order of 10 to the 6. So this is a very big assumption. And I will say at the end that it's probably the assumption which has to be suppressed. The end is almost finished. Now the implication. The implication is that of course, this mechanism provides the required mass transfer because it has been made for that. It accounts for the broad absorption line outflow. It doesn't require any previous enrichment. It is rapid, less than 10 to the 8th year. And it can account for the amount of metals. I have not shown it here, but you can believe me.
The outflow is just the supernova.
Yes, the outflow is just the supernova ejecta, which of course there is a problem also with that, because some outflows are very very rapid. 10 to, for instance, 30 cent, yes. So we must assume that some supernova are more powerful than in the local environment, and I don't know if it is possible that, for instance, neutron star which have been left accrete again, and the cycle is made begin again with more powerful supernova explosion. But this is not. Yes. With of course with. So I don't know. But not all the broad absorption line have such a velocity, and moreover, we have the broad emission line, which have a velocity of the order of a few thousand kilometers per second, and we can assume also that there is a mechanism of acceleration of these clouds, for instance, radiative acceleration, acting of the broad on the broad emission line to do the broad absorption line region. The dimension of the phenomena is of the order of 1 parsec, which corresponds to the broad line emission, and the non-isotropy of the phenomenon, of course, corresponds to the fact that it is perpendicular to the disk. It could provide a pre-galactic enrichment of galaxies harboring a black hole, and I will speak of that in the end now. And it could also trigger a starburst in the protogalaxy. But of course, as you have said, Bob, it can be also the opposite. You can have the starburst in the bar, for instance, like it has been assumed by Hamann and Ferland. It's not in contradiction. At least. So, to finish, pre-galactic enrichment. So, we have heard last week, and it's well known now, that there are black holes in almost all galaxies, which are whose mass is proportional to about 1,000, is proportional to the mass of the spheroid in the galaxy, of the bulge of the galaxy. We know that heavy elements exist at high Z in the intergalactic medium, since we have the Lyman alpha forest, which shows metallicity of the order of 10 minus 2 hundredths of solar metallicity, always, and never apparently smaller than that. Heavy elements exist in the oldest halo star, at least a few 10 minus 5 solar abundances have been found, and no lower abundance have been found, in spite of the fact that they could have been found if they exist, if they would exist. So the question which is of course now asked is whether the first black hole formed before or after the first time, and there have been propositions of that in the past, and Loeb and Basio?
Ratio, not Basio.
Oh, okay, sorry. Okay. So we have also, we know also that the codensity, the co-volume, the codensity of quasar peaks at about Z equal 2.5, say. The star formation is maximum at 1.5, so there is possibly a link between these two phenomena. And finally, in hierarchical scenario, Silk and Rees have proposed a scenario recently, which is not mentioned here. Small mass collapse first, and you get small spheroids, which correspond actually to the galaxies which are observed by the in the Hubble Deep Field, and also in the with the Keck now, and this small spheroid then merge and gives massive spheroid, elliptical galaxies, and small black hole in this case can form early, almost uniformly, and grow in the merging process. So it's, if we assume that, we can get an enrichment of the intergalactic medium, which is so first, we can get enrichment in the galaxy. We know that there is a black hole of 2 × 10⁶ solar mass in the galaxy. If we assume that a major fraction of this black hole has been formed before the galaxy is formed, we get, by this, the computation I have given before, about 10⁴ solar mass in metals at the beginning of the before the galaxy itself form, and when it is mixed with the mass of the galaxy, with the halo, it gives a primordial abundance, which corresponds to the abundance observed now in the oldest halo stars. So in early type galaxies, the same process, and finally in the intergalactic medium, the mass density of black hole, which is deduced from the observed quasar. This has been, it's a work which has been made almost 20 years ago, and has been followed by many other work which have confirmed the finding that there is a mass density of black hole of the order of, say, 10⁴, so 10⁶ closure density of the universe, which means that it's of the order of 10⁴ the density of the intergalactic medium. And by intergalactic medium, I mean the Lyman Alpha Forest, because we know that now that it is the main mass of the intergalactic medium is locked in the Lyman Alpha Forest. And in this case, we find also that it can, assuming that about 1/10 of a black hole is given to the intergalactic medium into metals during its formation, we get an enrichment of the order of 10⁻² solar, which is the enrichment in Lyman alpha cloud. And I have finished. As a conclusion, I will, so it remains, should be, replace my world space to be made now. So I think that this work was really very, very preliminary. We have to consider non-stationary model with inflow at all the radii, larger accretion rate, because I have not said that in this model we were limited to low accretion rate of the order of 0.1 a critical accretion rate, because above this value the disk is destroyed. What we have to do now is to make the same thing, but assuming that the disk is destroyed and reconstructed after by successive event and a kind of intermittent accretion rate inducing a kind of propagation of star formation. So of course, we have to consider disks which are non-homogeneous, like for instance in the galactic center. We have to consider the evolution of stars in a very low metallicity medium, because we don't know what happens really, and also the fate of the remnant neutron star and black hole, as we have said. We have to improve the prescription for star formation. We don't know, it was really a very, very rough prescription. And of course, also improve the opacities. In particular, we have not used intermediate case opacity, etc. And a possible test of the model, which perhaps maybe obtained in the future, is to see a supernova at a few parsecs from the center in an AGN, or even in a quiescent AGN, and this I think would be a proof of the existence of such phenomena. Okay.